took a wonderful walk yesterday. Walking up the street, it was wonderful. It was beautiful. The sun was just setting. Walked past many houses with patio furniture, beautiful lawns, large trees right in front. Seems that everybody has been working on their houses during this pandemic or soon after. All of the houses are painted. Everything was peaceful because it was in the evening. And in the evening, no one was out there cutting grass or making all kinds of noise. And it wasn't even a late evening. Around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, right before sunset. And it was the perfect temperature. As I was walking, I noticed how beautiful it was, but I also noticed how quiet things were. As I began to walk and look around, I only saw two or three other people taking walks during that time. A few cars passed me by. Otherwise, nothing was really happening. I was moved enough to write a poem that I published on vocal.media. The name of the poem is What We Call Safe, The Suburban Life. You can find it there at vocal.media under the name Om Prakash Gilmore. I'm going to read the poem to you and let you consider it and think about what it means when we consider the difference between living on planet Earth and life on planet Earth. So here we go with What We Call Safe, The Suburban Life. Patio decks, sculpted gardens and wild gardens, lawns cut so precise I could balance off a quarter, tables and chairs, patios, hot tubs, porches, awnings, and pine trees reaching like fingers pointing to clear blue sky. But something is missing. Within the boxes, behind two cars stationed in every other driveway, someone is looking at a flat screen and dreaming about the life they never have. The car, the house, the driveway. All that Maslow preaches would allow us to rise to a higher plane of awareness and self-realization has left us alone in the midst of neighbors worshiping the God of things, but afraid of ourselves. All the accoutrements set up and polished, waiting for friends and families to sit, drink, laugh, and play. Starving for the echo of children laughing and playing, but no one is there but death, holding the keys that will let us out of our little boxes. We dare not ask, we fear her so much. Now she is our freedom, not the keys, in her hands, and we have decided to never even desire come out of what we call safe. You may wonder what this means. You might wonder what it's about. What the poetry is about is the fact that many of us have decided to give up our life, to give up our experiences, to give up our wonder and our adventure and joy. In order to partake of what we think of as being safe. So much fear. Fear of the other person. Fear of the people in our own neighborhoods. Afraid that we will meet some of our neighbors and we won't like each other, so we'll be enemies all of a sudden. Or that someone will break in our house, or someone might need something and expect us to give it to them. The fear of entanglement. The fear of getting to know the people near us has driven us into boxes, into cages, locked us away as we adopted the idea that what made us happy and would keep us happy are all the things that we can purchase, that we can own, including the big TV set that most of us watch well into the evening as we begin to dream of wonderful places, of great experiences, experiences that are joyful as well as horrible and frightening, as we follow storylines created in someone's imagination with our own, so that we can sit on the couch and live out our lives through the experience of other people. The only way we can break free of such a mindset is to allow ourselves to die to the twisted concepts that we have picked up in our society. And through that death, we live. But most of us are so afraid of the spiritual or psychological death of the ego and death of the self that we would rather stay in our little boxes until we finally physically die and are set free from quiet lives of desperation. Well, the reason I talk about this is not because we are all doomed. The reason I'm talking about this is that we all have a choice about how we want to live. We have the power to reach out. We have the power to create communities out of neighborhoods. We have the power to know those who are close to us, who are next to us, maybe even to meet together in a community or a neighborhood and have potlucks or have lunch together sometimes or just coffee. We have the opportunity to talk with each other, to know each other's thoughts and feelings, to break down the walls that separate us, span through those cages. But we have to make that choice. We have to decide. There's one thing this horrendous experience we went through for the past year and we are still going through now has shown us, is that we truly need each other. And it's time for us to begin to heal our neighborhoods, to heal our communities, to build the type of life that we want to see now, starting at the grassroots. Because in truth, our institutions and governmental systems will never do that. Most of them, unfortunately, depend on surviving by keeping us separate, by putting us into little groups that will feed and nurture whatever their interests are, rather than having our best interest at heart and moving us to a place of beauty, wisdom, and empowerment. The only ones that can do that are us. The question is, do we want to exist? live lives of quiet desperation and only survive? Or do we want to partake of life on planet Earth? This is a very frightening proposition, isn't it? Yet again, it is a very freeing opportunity that we have. It takes us to the place where we aren't often able to go. That place is the understanding of how much power that we have as individuals and as a community. As individuals, we have the power to change our very thought processes. We have the power through several different ways to change our actual thought patterns, to change the inner voices in our mind, so instead of them saying fearful things or hurtful things, they are saying things that are positive. We have the power to create an inner world that will shift the way that we interact with the outer world. The frightening thing is that we, through our thoughts, through our intellect, through our deep understanding, and through the faith that we have, can shape and change our own minds, our own feelings, our own personalities, if we know how to do it. Once again, I say, we are not going to learn to do this within a system. The system has its culture. It has a way of thinking, and it has a way that it wants us to think. So when we go to people who want to help us, they are not going to help us experience a radical shift. They're going to try to help us live within this system as it is. They are not going to destroy the illusions and delusions that exist in our minds and on this TV set and everywhere. No, they are going to try to find ways to get us to buy into those, to use them to the best of our ability, to rise above them by going into them, to become successful, which means accepting all of the stereotypes and thoughts and ideas of the society, applying them until we can become consumers and rise to the top, and then sitting at the top, trying to understand why we still are not happy. And so going to the psychologists and psychiatrists and social workers and those within the system, unless they are very unique, is not going to change anything. But there are methodologies that we can use that are talked about daily. And most of those methodologies are found in the deep, mystical parts of almost every religion, the parts that are kept secret, that are only open to certain people. Now those parts are available all over the internet and through various books. By learning those and practicing them, we become free of our collective insanity. And we don't need to learn 1,000 things. don't need to learn 100 or even 10. If we learn one method and we practice it until we come to the end of that method, is no matter how boring it gets, we will achieve awakening, enlightenment. We will snatch the keys from the hands of death, and we'll be able to walk out into our community and start conversations, change the whole society, even by taking the second step. That second step is knowing oneself enough to be able to work with friends, family, and community to create a world that is peaceful, loving, and just. To get to know our neighbors, to get to know what it means to be diverse, to understand that we don't have to all look the same way or think the same way to get together, to hang out, to be friends. In fact, when I was young, friendships were different than other relationships. Because you see, back then, most of the time, the friends were the ones who really cared. They were willing to go out on the limb to tell us when something was wrong or when we were doing some behavior that was destructive. They cared more about us than they did themselves or their relationship. And most of the time, we could trust their observations. Over time, somehow, the idea of friendship shifted. So we started beginning to believe that our friends had to agree with everything we said. We started believing that they had to be exactly like us. But a long time ago, sometimes people were friends because they were different. And they shaped each other's thinking and helped each other expand. But somehow we have gotten weak. We don't believe in ourselves. So we seek friends who will support us by agreeing with us instead of disagreeing. This has to stop. That is why we must free ourselves first and then go out into the community, spreading ideas, thoughts, feelings, ways of being, so that our old community can be lifted up and become stronger and more self-sufficient. So that we can pool our economic resources if necessary, or our gifts and talents if necessary, or even just spend time with each other. When I was young, I remember walking down the street, and when we walked down the street, especially in the summer on a beautiful evening or beautiful afternoon, wherever there were porches, there were always people sitting out there, rocking on gliders or sitting on chairs somewhere, sitting on a porch talking, and other neighbors would come down sometimes, and we'd all be gathering on different porches talking. Children would be playing in the streets, jumping rope, playing touch football, high over the water, all kinds of strange things, constantly out in the street until the sun went down and they were called home. It wasn't like being on a TV set where you go in and nobody's there. That is what my walk felt like. It felt like I was in some episode of The Twilight Zone or One Step Beyond, where most of the people had gotten wiped off the earth, because all there were the porches, beautiful patios, all of these things set up to celebrate people. But nobody was there. Do we want that to be our epitaph? Everybody watching TV. Everything set up for the guests to come. The backyard's beautiful, the gardens are beautiful, everything's set up. But nobody's there. It's time for us to use our gifts and talents to make sure that somebody is there. If we don't do that, we are living a horrible lifestyle and not partaking of life at all. About us and what we're doing, visit us at www.nextstepcoaching.mysite.com. That is www.nextstepcoaching.mysite.com. I am a life coach. I lead Qigong classes and work with individuals to help create an atmosphere of agape, of internal love, and help them strengthen the mind, body, and spirit in order for them to live now, not to wait till tomorrow, but to be able to find joy, peace, love, and contentment. If you would like to learn more about this coaching, visit our website. Now back to the program. So how can we begin to change the world? By changing ourselves, I guess, and changing our communities. How do we really change ourselves? Doing something radical. We actually die to the voices in our head that have been put there by other people. Begin to hear the voices of our own hearts. And how do we do that? By accepting ourselves as we are right now. And by applying the type of love that is called agape, which is an unconditional love that involves not a feeling, but action. It means treating ourselves in a way that is loving, caring, and kind. No matter what the negative voices say or feelings say, loving ourselves with full passion and compassion and treating ourselves in a way that exemplifies real love in action. And when we can create a field of love in action around ourselves, it will be like fertile ground around a seed. The seed is who we are, and when a seed grows in rich, fertile soil, it grows into a tree or a plant that is strong and beautiful and bears fruit. We have the power to create the atmosphere within that allows us to grow into something wonderful and beautiful. Something that spreads its fruit throughout the rest of the world. And as individuals living close to neighbors, if we can reach out to our friends and our neighbors in a way to transform our own community, even if it starts with one person, or two people, or three people, we can empower the whole community eventually and pull together our ideas and our resources if necessary in order to make a safe, wonderful, beautiful community so that we can walk down the street and see people sitting on their porches laughing and joking, and they'll be waving at us and we'll wave at them. Sometimes they'll call us over to talk. It will get so busy sometimes that it will be hard even just to walk around the block and get back home without stopping and talking and having a great time with our neighbors. The community can become so good that we won't need to run away and escape or make friends way across town or to even visit other cities or countries. We can find the nurturing and the love and the adventure we have right in our own communities. And when that happens, we will be free. And that, my friends, is life on planet Earth.